Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jerry Shapiro, counsel for the petitioner, Rafael Rodriguez-Diaz. We'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Rodriguez has been a lawful permanent resident since 1990. He's the father of two U.S. citizen children. Both of his parents had lawful status in the United States, as do most of his 8 siblings. Now, Mr. Rodriguez has a conceivably long criminal record, including 2 violations of California Penal Code Section 273AA. 2003 and 2009, that's for driving under the influence of a minor child in his car. In 2012, 3 years after his second violation of the statute, he was charged with removability for that conviction under 8 U.S.C. 1227A2EI for being convicted of a crime of child abuse, child neglect, or child abandonment. The immigration judge and the BIA called the conviction for 273AA categorically a crime of child abuse, as defined in the statute. And the immigration judge found the offense fell squarely within the definition of crime of child abuse set forth by the BIA in Matter of Velasquez and Matter of Soram.
Well, Mr. Shapiro, this is Judge Callahan. I guess the question, to the extent that you argue that the BIA's definition of a crime of child abuse should not extend to instances where the child is not actually harmed, why are we not bound by our opinions in Alvarez, Serrateño versus Sessions, and Mendez versus Whitaker?
Well, Your Honor, with Alvarez, Alvarez was decided just weeks after this court made its decision in Martinez-Cedillo. With Martinez-Cedillo, the case was up for rehearing
I realize it was taken en banc, but then the petitioner died, so you don't have an en banc opinion, but you have that one vacated. But the problem is, it seems that the other cases still are precedent, so to the extent that they rely on that case, they're still precedent.
Well, Your Honor, the court in Alvarez-Serrateño relied on and indicated that it was bound by the decision in Martinez-Cedillo. And that's because, again, weeks earlier, Martinez-Cedillo had held that the generic definition announced in Soram was entitled to Chevron deference. And the Alvarez-Serrateño panel noted that it was bound by that precedent. But Martinez-Cedillo has been vacated, so it doesn't appear that Alvarez-Serrateño could be bound by it. And I would also note, Your Honor, that Judge Berzon, who was concurring in Alvarez-Serrateño, stated that if the panel was not bound by Martinez-Serrateño, she would have ruled in accord with Judge Wardlaw, who wrote a lengthy dissent in Martinez-Cedillo. So I'm not sure that the court would be bound any longer by Alvarez-Serrateño, since it very expressly said that it was only bound by Martinez-Cedillo, which has been vacated.
Well, I guess, though, recently, last week, I think, or recently on December 22nd, 2020, there's a in matter of Rivera-Mendoza, which holds that a conviction for child neglect in the second degree under an Oregon statute is categorically a crime of abuse. So that's sort of consistent with those other cases. And I think the 11th Circuit was the only one that was sort of going the way that you're going, and now other circuits have continued to join the 9th Circuit.
That's right. In Rivera-Mendoza, which was just a month ago, the BIA noted that the 9th Circuit had deferred to the definition in Soram, and that the generic crime of child abuse included acts and omissions that create that had to do with the risk of harm. But I would contend that with Martinez-Cedillo being vacated, the court that relied on it, explicitly relied on it, can no longer be bound by it. With the vacatur of that case, there's nothing on the issue of endangerment, or the Ninth Circuit has issued a ruling. I would just go on to say that with Alvarez Cedillo, that was also a case of involving a risk of harm. It wasn't looking to see if endangerment statutes were covered by the child abuse statute.
So right now, go ahead, Go ahead.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding your point about the reliance on the decision in Martinez-Cedillo. The Ninth Circuit had ruled. They then took the case en banc. Then the plaintiff died, and so the matter became moot and was dismissed. But that doesn't erase the original decision, does it? Or am I missing something there?
Well, I think it's vacated. The original decision would have been vacated when we go en banc. So it doesn't say it doesn't. It doesn't. We don't have an en banc opinion saying what the petitioner here is asking, but the other one isn't on the books. I think. I'm correctly stating what happens on the next.
Okay. This is. Thank you.
Our en banc process is a bit complicated.
It makes me glad to be a district judge. But anyway.
Well, and that was my understanding. That was my understanding as well, Your Honor, that with...
But the other cases are not wiped out. The two that I mentioned to you are still Ninth Circuit precedent. And so your argument has to be that because you say the only reason they were decided that way, that it therefore invalidates them. But it doesn't... They're not off the books. They are on the books. Those other cases are on the books.
But Alvarez-Serrantino was addressing the risk of harm issue, not whether or not endangerment was included within the child abuse statute, Your Honor.
Okay. What else would you like to say?
I'm running out of time, but I would like just take 1 minute to say that.
Okay, you can. Yeah. Okay, take the minute and then reserve for rebuttal.
Mr. Rodriguez convicted of child endangerment. There was no harm or injury of any kind to the child. And the question here is whether it's reasonable for the BIA to define the words of the statute to encompass convictions for what it calls endangerment-type offenses that criminalize acts.
You know, I guess you're in some ways, but yes, the child, there are two children, both of his children, on separate occasions he put in the car when he was drunk. So he has a difficult time claiming that he doesn't know the second time that it's wrong. That being said, I'm sure that you're aware that more people are killed by drunk drivers than are actually murdered. So it's, yes, he does have going for him that he didn't kill his children because he was drunk. But you're kind of pushing a rock uphill to convince me anyway that that's not dangerous conduct.
Oh, Your Honor, I don't disagree at all. And of course, it's dangerous conduct. And you know, DUIs, he has a string of DUIs, and these were just two of them. But I would just want to note that...
Doesn't he have, seven or something? He doesn't have just two. I mean, but he has two with those convictions.
Exactly. He had others as well.
All right. Do you want to save the balance of your time for a rebuttal?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right. We'll hear from Ms. Miles, I believe. Is it?
Yes, I'm a late entry, but I'm handling the case today. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Erica Miles for the United States Attorney General. As Your Honor noted, there are two precedent decisions on the book that recognize that this court accords Chevron deference to the board's complete definition. After the matter of Sorum decision clarified its position of its existing otherwise thorough definition already deferred to back in 2009 by this court in Fregoso. And petitioner has not presented any good reason for this court to stop deferring to the board's precedent.
Let me ask you this, though. Accepting that an act need not be turpitudinous, the criminal, why isn't the BIA's definition of crime of child abuse, which covers passive conduct, broader than the definition of criminal negligence?
Why isn't it broader than the concept of criminal negligence?
Yes.
Criminal negligence is specifically the mens rea, and it is beyond the civil standard for negligence. Criminal negligence means an a person under ordinary circumstances has not acted reasonably and without regard for risk of harm. Criminal negligence is high, and the board's minimum mens rea is criminal negligence. But also, to be sure, it's not just the definition of child abuse. The statutory term is child abuse, child neglect, or child abandonment. And that is Congress's term in the statute. And the board and Matter of SORA made clear that its definition, as previously articulated, covers also child neglect and child abandonment. And in examination of that entire statutory term, that's where it clarified, when it presented with an endangerment statute in that case, that endangerment types offenses can qualify just as long as that risk of harm to children is sufficiently high.
If I'm not mistaken, D.S. Rodriguez asserts that because California's Penal Code 273AA is the one that we're talking about, can be violated by passive conduct, exposing a child to a dangerous situation, he's alleging it can be violated in good faith and thus not be turpitudinous and should not be considered a crime. What's your response to that argument?
Turpitudinous, for one, has no place in examining the statute. That is primary. But secondarily, the minimum mens rea, according to the California Supreme Court in Valdez, for this statute is criminal negligence. So it involves both criminal negligence for passive acts, or they call them indirect acts against children. So willful under the statute, because the statute says willful, and then it has a prong where it's actual acts. So in Valdez, the Supreme Court explained that willful acts, which are indirect, amount to criminal negligence mens rea. For direct acts, those are a general intent to actually do the act. So this California statute is certainly not broader than the board's definition, because the minimum mens rea of criminal negligence for the California statute meets the minimum mens rea for the board's definition.
So that I understand your argument, that, you know, we also set the scene for the en banc case, that it was called en banc, so it vacated a decision that Cedillo, I guess, it vacated Cedillo. So that opinion is not on the books. And the two cases that I cited that are Ninth Circuit precedent that are still on the books do rely on, they consider Cedillo in its analysis. What's your response to what the petitioner said on that?
My response is that those are precedent decisions, as Your Honor pointed out, and they relied on Martinez-Cedillo to say that the court defers. But, you know, to be sure, this court has been deferring to the board's definition since 2009 in Fregoso, that precedent decision. And also, to be sure, the board's primary, you know, mostly fulsome definition is articulated in Velazquez Herrera, which Fregoso deferred to. The SORUM did three things that were, you know, gave us a clarification that it did not include. It clarified there's no element of requiring proof of actual injury. So they said, we never said it before, and we're now, you know, clarifying so everyone knows that we find no reason to add that limitation of requiring proof of actual injury. So they just clarified that they never said it before and they're not saying it now in SORUM. They also clarified that the definition they previously articulated that this court defers to encompasses child abuse, but also neglect and abandonment. That entire congressionally legislated term in the statute that it had to give meaning to. And then finally, it said within the universe of abuse, neglect, and abandonment, that endangerment offenses will fall within there as long as they're sufficiently high. So it expounded upon what can be maltreatment. Endangerment offenses can be maltreatment of a child, can constitute impairment of a child's well-being, as long as that risk is sufficiently high. So with this backdrop in mind, you know, as I keep mentioning, this court has been deferring to the board's primary definition in Velazquez-Herrera since 2009. And just, you know, the board clarified that we don't have an additional element of requiring actual proof of harm or injury to a child, just as long as there was maltreatment or there was an impairment of well-being. And nothing that
now we have to distinguish, but we have to distinguish between 273AA and 273AB, correct? Because
yes, and the board agrees with this court.
Caratino focuses on the difference between the two, so we have to be in AA. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And the board, there is a board decision called Mendoza Osorio. It's a 2016 decision, and it is in the next case's brief. It's not before the court in the briefs here. 2016 board precedent saying explicitly what you just asked. The board said the B offense, the misdemeanor version of endangerment, it agrees. It is not endangerment. The board said because it creates only a mere possibility of harm, you know, as signaled by the words may endanger, and also under circumstances not amounting to a likelihood of great bodily injury or death. You know, so it can, so the, you know, we now have a comparison that the board said the B provision, it agrees with this court in Fregoso that the B provision does not qualify. And, but yet here with the A provision, which is the felony ground, we have a set of circumstances where explicitly in the statute, the circumstances must be create a likelihood. It must be likely that great bodily injury or death will occur, and then that risk of harm is also presented. So there, the board has delineated, it has limitations, has expressed those limitations, and has shown that this very California statute, the A prong meets it, and the B prong does not.
So I think I misspoke. I think I said it was the 11th Circuit, but it was the 10th Circuit.
It's right? The 10th, but, yes. It brought the Ibarra decision out of the 10th.
The Ibarra. But then subsequently, since this case, other circuits have joined the 9th?
Yes. So we filed a 28-J letter on the most recent one, the 5th Circuit, in August this past year. And in addition to the 5th, we have the second, which has the Second Circuit stated it in Flores, and it reconfirmed it in 2019 in the Matthews decision, addressing an argument about Supreme Court decision saying we have no reason that Flores, there's no reason Flores is undermined. So they reaffirmed that they defer in the second, the third defers, and the 11th defers. So the circuit split is getting wider. From the 10th Circuit.
It does exist.
But as this, as your colleagues on the panel, majority panel in Martinez-Cedillo pointed out, and also in the Flores decision, the judges pointed out, there are very strong reasons for rejecting Ibarra because it is, in this court's colleagues' terms, flawed. And they gave four very strong reasons as to why the Ibarra decision is flawed, and primarily Ibarra took issue with the board's method of reaching its generic definition, but the board in no way violated precedent in how it reached its definition. Supreme Court has never limited the board as to how
okay,
it
I think you're over
definition.
Your I think you're over your time unless
I am I apologize
but if my colleague no it's
I
okay
have,
my
yes, colleague I have a question
please answer
I, yes I'd like to ask one question just a point of clarification. Let's assume that the issue that was before the court in Martinez-Cedillo is in fact still an open question. Okay, just take that as a given. If we were to conclude that Martinez-Cedillo was wrongly decided and that matter of Sorum is not entitled to Chevron deference, do you still prevail in this case?
I think the answer is it depends. It depends on the reasons you articulate for not deferring to the board. Like, for example, in Ibarra, we have filed a case in the 10th Circuit that even though Sorum was rejected, you know, the Ibarra's reasons were they didn't like criminal negligence coupled with, you know, so the minimum mens rea of criminal negligence coupled with no actual injury. So we filed a brief in the case saying, well, this is outside of that because we have a higher mens rea under this endangerment statute of knowing or reckless. So it's not coupled with no proof of, you know, a requirement of actual injury. I would say here, if you say this court were to follow exactly what the Ibarra court did, I would say this statute still falls within the board's definition as primarily laid out in Velazquez Herrera, because allowing for circumstances likely to cause death or great bodily injury to a child is necessarily impairing their well-being. And whether it be criminally negligent mens rea or the more stringent or the general intent, which also falls within the statute, that the impairment factor is so great, the likelihood is so great, that it's not just the mere possibility, like under B, that a child could maybe tumble off a bed or something, maybe possibly get hurt, like what the court was concerned about in the Fregoso case.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions for my colleagues? Okay, then we'll go back for a rebuttal. From Mr. Shapiro, I think you have a minute and a half.
That's right. Thank you, Your Honor. I would just note that Fregoso deferred to the definition in Velazquez Herrera. Sorum was not deferred to, okay? Not when the Martinez-Cedillo decision was vacated. And I want to note also that the reason for Judge Wardlaw's dissent, or the primary reason, and for Ibarra, is because with Sorum, the BIA crafted a civil definition for a crime. That's not reasonable. They went to civil child abuse statutes in 38 states in 2009, not the criminal laws in effect in 1996. Terms are usually defined differently in civil law and criminal law.
Didn't Cedillo, even though Cedillo's not on the books anymore, I think it wasn't it Judge Bybee that took a pretty aggressive approach of saying why Ibarra was wrong?
In Ibarra, the Ibarra court actually got this statute wrong, 273AA. But that shouldn't undermine the approach that the Ibarra court took, which was to do a 50-state analysis from a child abuse criminal statute in 1996.
Anything else?
No, thank you very much, Robert.
All right. Well, thank you both for your argument. I would, even though you won't be able to jump up and say anything in the next two cases, since we're asking other people, I suggest that you just stay on so you'll have an idea of everything that the panel's hearing on the particular issue. Thank you. This matter will stand submitted.